This is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
Hey, we gotta talk about a Bucks win for once.
This is no ordinary pod.
Cha cha.
No ordinary pod.
Yes, it is, Noah Hemer. Thank you for welcoming us to the Nordinary Pod on the Radio St. Pete Network. I am your co-host, Michael Duggar. Joining me, 7:22 a.m. on Friday morning. The morning after the cannons were fired from afar is Noah Hemer. Noah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Getting ready for a nice, long, busy weekend. Got a lot of great football on Sunday. Not an awesome college football slate, but that's okay. I'm always excited to watch my Huskers play. Got to watch a Bucks win last night, so that's going to be fun to talk about for once, because don't get many weeks in which we get to talk Bucks victories, especially one that looks so nice. So just ready to get rolling with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. We're going to power through this. We're both feeling a little tired. Noah had a little busier week than me, as usual. But we'll power through this. Let's start in Tampa. Let's start in Carolina, where the Bucks scored a massive road victory over a divisional opponent, 20-14 on the road. And there's a couple. The main takeaway from me with the Tampa Bay Bucks for the first 2 weeks of the season has been their improved defensive play and aggressiveness under Todd Bowles. And it's not just the aggressive play calling and the more blitzing. Everyone just looks like they know their role. The overall talent of the defense looks better. And it's nice to see Vernon Hargreaves making plays again. That was one of the things that you discussed, is that he needs to show that he can play in this system. And he's playing like a first-round pick through two weeks. He has a pick six in game in the week one. He had 12 tackles last night, including the game-saving tackle on 4th-and-1 from the 2-yard line to knock Christian McCaffrey out of bounds before he could cross the first down marker to seal the victory. There's a couple different angles. The offense simplified the game plan. Just what you'd want to see from a road team who is going into, I wouldn't say a hostile environment, because the lightning and the rain delay took a little steam out of the building, in my opinion, watching on TV at least. But this is what you want to see, and this was a very, like, a veteran win, in my opinion. So what were your thoughts on the Bucks beating the Panthers?
Christian McCaffrey just did not get a lot going. He had, I want to say, 15 or 18 total touches, 16 rushes, 2 catches for a total of 63 yards. No, 53 yards? 53 yards. He just didn't really get a whole lot going, and neutralizing Christian McCaffrey will neutralize this entire offense. Cam Newton looked awful. I don't know if he's hurt or not. I don't know if the Panthers are hiding how healthy he actually is. He came out and said it doesn't matter how healthy his shoulder or his foot might be. He can't be playing like that. And I agree entirely. He was missing throws to the outside to Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore, ones that he should be able to make plays. And I think the most disappointing part of it for Cam, in terms of Cam's performance, was, yeah, the Bucks pass rush was awesome between Sue, Vay, Nasib, Golston, Shaquille Barrett. That they were getting after it, and they were collapsing the pocket. Cam didn't really have a whole lot to do, but what I would like to see Cam do is get outside the pocket a little bit and make something happen. But he just was a statue there. He was like Tom Brady in the pocket, just kind of taking the beating. So, and I think a lot of that goes to, this is what the Bucks secondary has lacked for so long. They've been one of the worst secondaries. Like, we haven't been able to defend the pass for so many years. And now we have a pass rush to kind of take, to alleviate some of that pressure that's been put on that secondary. Shaquille Barrett's playing like how did he ever not start in Denver? But that's because he's playing behind Nick Chubb and Von Miller. So he's just taking advantage of his opportunities.
We love that signing.
I loved that signing. I was very excited. I was like, that's a legitimate pass rusher that can play in a 3-4. We did not have a true, like, JPP, not a true, like, 3-4 type of guy that would have played, assuming, like, if he would have stayed healthy. But Shaquille Barrett knows what he's doing in a 3-4.
And he had 2 sacks last night, brings his total up to 3 sacks for the season. And to quickly harp on the Cam Newton lack of accuracy with the ball, here's just a couple numbers. He was 25 of 51 last night. He had 15 off-target throws. 10 were overthrown, 5 were underthrown. That's the most since Chicago's Mitchell Trubisky in Week 7 of last season. He completed 61% of his passes to receivers with 3-plus yards of separation. That is terrible. He was 0 for 10 when under duress. Got sacked 3 times. So the reason that I was out on the Panthers this year, besides getting my heart broken last year, was the injury history on Cam's piling up. Yes, his shoulder, he had a full camp, a full summer of throwing, but then he gets his foot injured. And Cam has never been the most accurate quarterback. No one ever loved Cam Newton, and he was never dominant because of his arm. It was the mix of the running game and the passing game where he would dominate and where he carried this offense. Now it's turned to a Christian McCaffrey-based offense, and that's what moves the needle for them. But when you shut down Christian McCaffrey, like you said, as the Bucks did, literally every time McCaffrey had the ball, you saw 2-3 Bucks flying to him. It was very impressive. We haven't seen this type of gang tackling from a Tampa side of things in a long time. And this was with Devin White leaving the game in the first quarter with the knee injury. And he had a Kevin Minter come in and step in and make plays. He had an interception call back for a very bad defensive holding call. But Cam does not look right. And if that foot is really bothering him, limiting his rushing attempts, which he only had one last night, this Carolina team is not going to go anywhere fast. So I know we want to talk about the Bucs offense, but the main story of this is how bad the Panthers offense looked, because it was very glaring. So how would you go about not fixing all the issues of Carolina, because their O-line's still a problem. Their young receivers have drops, and yes, they create separation, but Greg Olsen was the leading receiver, had over 100 yards. So what is the formula? How would you go about fixing this Carolina offense?
I guess you just need to start spreading it out and running quick hitters. I think that's what I would do. Because it seemed to me, let me ask you this. Did it seem like Cam Newton was under center too much last night? Is that something that you noticed?
I feel like the play calling was extremely predictable. Where if they were under center, it was a run. And if they were in shotgun, it was a pass. And I know that sounds stupid, but we saw the success last week of like Lamar Jackson and Dak Prescott with the zone read out of shot, the play action out of shotgun, the effectiveness. We're not seeing that from the Panthers play calling.
That's probably my main area of concern. It just seems as if Cam's getting no help in terms of schematics from a schematic standpoint.
Let me ask you this question real quick. So if you had a 6'6", 260-pound quarterback who is a freak of nature in terms of what he can do running the ball, and you had 4th-and-1 with the game on the line.
Oh.
Would you do some semblance of a play you did last week with putting Christian McCaffrey at quarterback, except instead of doing a read option, which was extremely successful, with McCaffrey taking the snap and reading the defense with Cam being running back, or would you do a fake reverse Jets wildcat sweep to the weak side with your running back? Did that not tell you something, that Cam may not be healthy and they are complete limiting hits? Because this offense goes with Cam's legs.
I was anticipating some type of Cam Newton quarterback power, quarterback run, just straight up the gut, essentially. So I'm like, who's going to stop this man from getting 1 yard on fourth down? Like, unless if you got a free defender coming right at him, I think he's just going to score, or at least get the 1 yard. I did not. Bucks did a great job containing that play on the outside. Vernon Hargreaves did a great job. Golson did a great job keeping that angle down the line to cut off McCaffrey so that there was no cutback lane. I don't know how you don't give the ball to Cam right there. And I understand giving the ball to your best player in Christian McCaffrey, but the fact that Cam Newton didn't touch the ball on that, I think that speaks more volume, like you said, to his how the Panthers at least feel about his health.
And it must not be good.
And either it's not good, it's on the fence of being good, or they're that scared that he's that prone to injury. It's probably a combination of all the three.
And I don't want to... Yeah, go ahead to finish it on, my bad.
I just don't know what they're going to do, because he's not precise enough with his throws to be hitting... He doesn't have any big receivers.
Mm-mm. Greg Olsen,
DJ Moore's
it.
Not... Yeah, DJ Moore's not a big guy. Curtis Samuel's not a big guy. Christian McCaffrey's not a big guy. Greg Olsen's old. No more Funches. Not that Funches was great for them, but no more Funches. Throw Cam. At this point, it's like, all right, if he can't throw the ball, get him healthy, put him at receiver. You got now a 6'6" receiver, and just have Will Greer throw him the ball.
That's funny. Will Greer was terrible in the preseason, unfortunately, Rose. You know, because you know you won't find a bigger Will Greer fan than me.
That's what I'm saying.
It's. I think what was in their mind was that fourth down at midfield when the Bucs stopped Cam Newton from running, which what he did get 1 yard, and they just needed 1 yard. They didn't need a touchdown on that thing. But let's go. Let's stop talking. The Bucs. I mean, we could talk all day about the Bucs defense. It was a back to back very good performances. They only gave up 17 points last week. Don't forget, there was two pick sixes done by Jameis. And that was the big story of this team. And that's when I did my little preview. And I talked to people like, oh, you think the Bucks are going to win? Like, I talked to some friends. I'm like, I'm kind of done predicting Bucks games. I'm going to talk about matchups, but I'm done predicting games because it's so unpredictable with this team. But it's simple. Jameis takes care of the ball. Bucks win. And he did exactly that in this game. He went, let me pull up the numbers real quick. He was 16 of 25, 208 yards, and a touchdown. He got sacked 3 times, but he didn't turn the ball over. No fumbles, nothing. Ground game, 31 attempts on the ground, 100 yards. Only a 3.2 average, and Barber had 23 for 82 for 3.6 average and a touchdown. But it was still he was still getting little – he was just – I don't know. It wasn't – those numbers surprised – go ahead.
I just think one of the bigger things that – leads to them rushing the ball 31 times for 100 yards. They had the ball for 33 minutes, 53 seconds. So essentially 34, it was a 34-26 split. That's 8 minutes. That's almost an entire, that's half of a quarter longer that they had the ball than Carolina.
And you know what's crazy? Carolina ran 13 more plays.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Cam threw 20. Cam threw 50 times. That's a lot of throwing. But, I mean, the Bucs recipe was simple. Hand the ball off, and you make efficient throws. And they were quick throws. Timing routes, something Jameis was really good at in college, and something that Dirk Cutter and Jameis found some common ground with throughout Jameis' first 4 years in the league. Godwin, our man. 8 for 121 and a touchdown. Mike Evans, 4 for 61. O.J. Howard. I mean, there's just – what are your thoughts on how the Bucs are using their pass catchers? Do you think it's more take what the defense gives you? Do you think it's more schematic to find Godwin and use Evans as the big play threat? What are your thoughts on – because Jameis had a beautiful deep ball to Mike Evans, which is not something you say you hear every day and see every day when you're watching the Bucs. But what are your thoughts on how – Byron Leftwich has been using his pass catchers?
I think Chris Godwin's going to continue to be the focal point of the offense in terms of moving the ball down the field. And then Mike Evans is going to be your it's, all right, we're going to keep getting Chris Godwin the ball until you decide to, like, start double-teaming him or making having him to reroute his routes. As soon as you start paying more attention to Chris Godwin, I'm going to start getting the ball to Mike Evans, and he's going to be ready for it. So I think that's going to be the combination. And I think the tight end position, for this Bucs offense to be sustainable, the tight end position has to get going. Bruce Arians has not had much success with tight ends in his career, but the tight end, we are too talented at tight end for them to not be involved. OJ Howard had nothing. No catches, no nothing. Didn't touch the ball.
Maybe, all right. Maybe OJ, I'm going to say this. OJ Howard is immensely talented. Are we sure that he warrants a bigger workload than Cameron Brate?
Oh, I don't know. Not with the connection that Jameis and Cameron Brate have. But between the two of them, there's got to be something.
There just hasn't
been a whole lot for me to think that that's just for the sustainability of the offense. Because I'm sorry, Breshad Perriman as the being the number three option is a terrible decision when you have those two at tight end.
It's just tough. I was on board the OJ Howard bandwagon, and I know it's only 2 weeks, but he played so bad last week, and then this week we don't see him do much, and I don't know if he's a better. He had a great seal block on Luke Kuechly to on Peyton Roberts' touchdown run. I don't know. It's just very weird, and people are already jumping on. You know, from a fantasy perspective, Mike Evans and OJ Howard, they're bust on that stuff. Mike Evans, I'm not worried about. He was sick on Sunday, throwing up on the sidelines, and it takes a couple days to get over the stomach bug and then get your fluids back. But he made some big plays for the Bucs this game. I'm not worried about him. OJ, I'm a little more worried about. And I know that we see the Bucs personnel, we see the offenses of Bruce Arians in the past. But this isn't Bruce Arians calling plays. This is Byron Leftwich, and you understand that, and that the Bucs have a defense through two games. Jimmy G and the Niners are a pretty good offense when Jimmy G's healthy, and Kyle Shanahan's getting a rhythm calling plays. We stifled them pretty much, legit stifled them. Carolina at home, coming off 27 points against the Rams, who are a vastly superior talented team than the Bucs. You would say that it's just a very weird feeling around Tampa Bay to say, hey, we have a ground and pound game again, and we're going to play solid defense. I like it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing too much negativity from a fantasy side of things when I'm reading and stuff, and no one's focusing on just, hey, the Bucs just gutted out a division win and are now in position to be atop of the NFC South. Because when we'll get to later, the Saints play at the Rams, and they're not favored in that game. They lose that game. Bucs are tied at 1-1, and we play the Giants next week. So there's just a lot. I feel very good about the Bucs. I wore my Bucs shirt, my Bucs shorts. I'm just like a giant red strawberry right now. I went to sleep in it, still wearing it now. I'm very hyped. That was a very fun performance. And what are your two questions for you to before we move on to the rest of the Sunday slate? How do you view this Bucs team if this defense can continue this play? And what is their ceiling? Those could be two questions in the same, but just what are your thoughts on this? Final thoughts on this game and moving forward. How good can this team be if they play defense like this as their offense figures it out?
If they can continue to play defense like this, this team has a chance to be a wild card team at a minimum. That defense can take them a long ways. If that D-line stays healthy, but the thing is they're going to struggle when they go up against big-name receivers. when they go up against Julio, Mike Evans, or not Mike Evans, Michael Thomas, like they have to twice a year, that's when they're going to struggle. Because we still don't have we don't have anyone on that defense that can guard those guys. Mm-mm. That's, once they get someone that can, like a, once they get a lockdown, not like Jalen Ramsey, because obviously it's hard to get a top five corner in the NFL, but once they can get a lockdown guy that can actually run with these ones, that's when this team will take the next step. But I think this team, I'd say wild card actually would probably be their ceiling.
Yeah, looking at their schedule, it's a tough schedule after the Giants. It's tough.
I don't think there's any way that they can win the division just on the basis that I don't think that they have anyone that can, like, if the Saints, if they can keep generating pressure, they have a chance.
And that's something we're going to see a lot of. We're going to see an aggressive attack. We're not just going to see them rushing four or five consistent. Maybe not even five. They're rushing six, sometimes seven, going zero just all out. And in the post-game interview, when Dead Jameis did with the NFL Network crew, Jameis mentioned going up against Todd Bowles' defense every time. It's crazy look. It's crazy blitzes. They're on you very quickly. And the Bucs' defense looks fast. It's just exciting. And I know everyone in this age of fantasy football and high-powered offenses enjoys that. I enjoy defense. That was a fun, tense game throughout the whole entire, all four quarters. Started out slow 3-3, but then after that, it was still plays being made, all that stuff. It was a fun, it's just a good time to be a Bucs fan. And there's a chance we get to hold on and get to 2-1 before we go at Rams, at Saints, host Panthers, and at Titans, at Seahawks. Which sounds very difficult. So, all right. Now from the Bucs and Panthers, there's a night game. Let's move on to the Sunday slate of week two. And we're going to each talk about, we're going to discuss our personal favorite games of the week and then go through the entire slate as a whole, or get through as much as we can. Let's begin with your game of the week. Why don't you tell the listeners why you are so zeroed in on the Indianapolis Colts and the Tennessee Titans?
I think it's just going to be the game that decides a lot in the AFC. Are the Titans for real? Can they handle? Because they took it to a Browns team that does not have a good offensive line. They took it to a Browns team that seems to be very undisciplined. And I wish that would have been something that we would have talked about going into the season is, all right, yeah, they got Freddie Kitchens. Yeah, they got Todd Monken. But how disciplined is this team going to be? That's the difference between the Patriots and everyone else year in and year out. They don't make stupid mistakes. They don't make stupid penalties. And they do their job. They don't make mistakes in terms of missing their assignments. There's a difference between making a mistake and getting a flag on you, and there's a difference between making a mistake and not doing your assignment. And the Patriots, historically speaking, play some of the cleanest football. So how will the Titans fare against this Titans defense fare against a top five offensive line in the Colts and a team that does have many, many weapons at many different places? I think the Colts are very happy with their skill positions and confident that their offensive line can march them up and down the field. So I'm curious to see how the Titans can battle that on that side of the ball.
Where would you attack the Titans' defense if you were Frank Reich and Jacoby Brissett?
I think I would, I don't know, because you have to neutralize that pass rush slightly. I would probably run the ball a lot in terms of whatever type of run scheme that they want to do, but I'd probably be throwing a lot of screens
to Marlon,
and just trying to get to Marlon Mack. Yeah.
Marlon Mack is balling in, as a three-down back lately. He's out-targeted Nyheim Hines for four straight games. It's such a weird thing because Tennessee has three, not big, but three known names in terms of cornerback talent, but I just don't know if any of them are really like that great. And I went back 2 years ago and didn't look at last year's games. because that's when Brissett was quarterback, and it's a much different, much, much better supporting cast and coaching staff around him this time around. But they held T.Y. Hilton to 3 catches and 16 yards combined in those two 2017 games. So I don't know if that's the if Vrabel can duplicate those results. I don't know if the secondary can do all that, but that's a worrisome stat line for me. Although I don't think he's going to do that. I would still play him. I'm still playing him in fantasy. I just think that Devin Funchess going down, you're just going to be relying on T.Y., Jack Doyle, and Eric Ebron. And do you think that the Ebron, Jack Doyle, Marlon Mack triumvirate is enough to make is enough to offset T.Y. Hilton's struggles against Tennessee, Funchess's absence, and the and Brissett's limitations as a quarterback?
I don't know. I need to see what Jacoby Brissett can he make take the next step and be a playmaker is the biggest thing for me. I think T.Y. could have I don't know, this pass rush is going to be bearing down on Jacoby Brissett because they can hit you from so many different places. They're not how I describe the Titans is they're not great or elite anywhere on that defense. They're just really good across the board, which is scarier because they don't really have much of a weakness. It's pick your poison. So I think they're going to have to, this is, if they want to win this game, they're going to have to keep it lower scoring and just grind it out and then hope that your defense can play better D.
And before I ask that question of, do you think the Colts can play better defense than the Titans play defense and in a grinded out style, which sounds like it's playing perfectly into Tennessee's hands, who it seems like Brissett is still a game manager. And you said you wanted him to see him be a playmaker. Not how do you think Frank Reich should make him put more trust in him, but do you think that Brissett has it in him to lead, not an elite offense, but to lead a top tier, not like a top half of the league offense in this situation? Do you think he has the arm talent, the mind, all of these things to do so? Because from what we saw from week one, even when they were trailing, they still were a run-first team. And that, if you're still trailing, and yes, they came back and tied, eventually lost in overtime to the Chargers, but I was expecting to see a little more chances downfield. We just didn't see that. So do you think that Reich will put his trust in Brissett to break out of this game management scale?
I don't think he will, but I think it's something that is going to need to happen if this team wants to take the next step. Because they can't rely solely on this run game because they don't play good enough defense. They're not going to be able to score enough points. But I don't outside and you make a great point. Devin Funchess out. Outside of T.Y., Doyle, and Ebron, where do you go? Deion Kane.
I would love to see that. Wide receiver Ewan Clemson gets another one. I would love to see that.
I feel like that's a very real possibility. If he can get going. I just want to see, you know how we saw with Matt LaFleur's offense, a lot of the timing routes.
Yeah.
A lot of the, we're just going to get these drive starters going. I would love to see something very similar for Jacoby Brissett because I don't think it's an in-between-the-ears issue for Jacoby Brissett. Especially after sitting behind Andrew Luck, like, I think he's ready. And, like, kind of how we saw with Jameis from week one to here, you know, last week was Jacoby Brissett's first week actually playing in the new offense in a game. Coming into week two.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be, I mean, on the road still, but in a familiar place.
It's a tall task.
This game just is going to decide, A, how good can Tennessee be? Because if Tennessee, this is why this is such a big game to me, if Tennessee can dominate this game in a, not necessarily in a similar fashion, but in a, as they did last week, but they can clearly control the game, Tennessee has one of the better chances of beating New England. Because the only way you're going to beat New England this year is by running the ball and playing good defense. Because if you try to get in a shootout with the Patriots this year, their defense is too good. And they have way too many weapons on offense. And the best, greatest quarterback of all time.
I'm more shocked by you saying he's the greatest quarterback of all time than anything.
In terms of statistics and getting dubs, yes. In terms of what I see with my eyes, he's just not my favorite to watch, but I recognize that he is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's go to the Tennessee side of things. I'm not gonna. Tennessee does have. I think if Tennessee, if Mariota can get running the ball, if they can utilize Mariota as a running threat more. And get A.J. Brown and Corey Davis involved with Delanie Walker staying healthy. And what we've seen from Derrick Henry, who's just a grind-it-out style. I could see that. Which is why we love this team so much heading into the season. They know who they are. They run the ball with Derrick Henry. They limit Mariota's passing attempts, although he didn't look too bad in week one. But and when they do throw, they target Delanie Walker and A.J. Brown. They're a well-coached team that understands what they're good at, and they're going to grind it out. So I really like this Tennessee team. And this is your game, and Tennessee's 3-point favorites. So how do you see this going?
I see Tennessee taking it to them and solidifying themselves as a real threat in the AFC. I'm taking Tennessee 27-20. 24-17.
I agree with you. I went 26-17 myself, and I am looking forward to this game. I think that there'll be a couple 2-0 teams. I think Tennessee will be a surprise one. I mean, they have wins over Cleveland and Indianapolis. So those are two pretty big wins. So let's move on to my game of the week, and it features my Super Bowl pick. I think you hopped on the Super Bowl pick this wagon as well. It features Can't Trust Kirk. It features Dalvin. It is the Minnesota Vikings at the Green Bay Packers. Packers are 3-point spread, which means these teams are virtually even. And the reason I am so big on this game is not just because it's a big rivalry game, but this is such a massive game in the scheme of the NFC North. Minnesota has a chance to shut down two talented offenses in a row, impose its run game on a defense that held Chicago to 46 yards on 3.1 yards per attempt. If the Packers win, they're 2-0 with two division wins over their two biggest rivals. And that's a perfect start to the Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur relationship and marriage. And, you know, you can develop trust by making right play calls at the right time, big plays happening. But you know what really brings trust? Winning football games. And they win these two games, that will have good vibes throughout the whole locker room. And it will answer the biggest offseason question of can LaFleur and Rodgers coexist. And it's another tall task for their defense. But this main thing is such. I'm not going to say it's a contrast of styles because they're a lot more similar than they think, especially offensively. Despite having Rodgers and Cousins, they're both are going to not establish the run, but in terms of the Packers sense, but they're both going to make plays and throws off of play action. So, can Minnesota duplicate their archaic, ancient style of play, which is play phenomenal defense, hand the ball off to Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison, and have their quarterback throw 10 times a game? Especially because they're now playing a much better defense in Green Bay, and they have to keep up with Aaron Rodgers, and they're on the road. On the flip side, can the Packers make Kirk throw more than 10 times? You do that, that sounds like that's a good start right there. Will Aaron Rodgers' play action work against another top D? It worked on one drive last week. Two drives last week, and those two drives ended up being enough. I think they're going to need a little more this week because they're not facing Mitchell Trubisky. Facing Kirk Cousins, but they're not facing Mitchell Trubisky. And they're facing a dynamic outside zone run scheme on offense, which I love. Packers, can they get Aaron Jones going? Can Xavier Rhodes versus Devontae Adams? My personal favorite matchup, Marquez Valdes-Scantling versus Trey Waynes. Can Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen torch a young secondary that we both love, but gave a 102 to Allen Robinson, and it should have been a lot more? There are matchups that intrigue me everywhere in this game. There's elite talent everywhere, and this is one of the best rivalries in the entire NFL. So I just laid out pretty much everything of why I'm excited. Noah, what are your thoughts on this game?
What does this Packers team look like when, because Trubisky, comparison to Kirk Cousins, like you said, I'll take Kirk Cousins every day.
And that's saying something.
Exactly. What, they can't just stop, try to stop the run and be like, all right, let's just let Kirk Cousins beat us. Because if you give Kirk Cousins time in the pocket with these receivers, it can be a long game, especially if this run game gets going. But if they can neutralize the run and get Kirk Cousins into second and long, third and long situations, this Packers D is going to start teeing off on terms of getting to the quarterback, and that's when this Vikings team gets in trouble. So like you said, if Kirk Cousins is throwing 25 plus times, it is not looking good for the Vikings. On the other side of it, I'm excited to see how this Matt LaFleur play action can continue to progress. Can Davante Adams be his go-to guy, or is he going to be a decoy a lot of the season, or at least in this early part of the season until defenses start respecting the other receivers? Can that ground game actually get going a little bit more? Because if it gets and there have been studies that say that running the ball doesn't have direct correlation with like play action success. It's just not something. We want it to be true, but it's statistically not true. But if you can start running the ball and being productive in that, in dicing up the defense right at its core, what that's going to do is that's just going to bring more defenders into the box. And if you can get more defenders into the box and you can get more one-on-one opportunities on the outside, Aaron Rodgers will pick you apart every single time. And if you're too scared to bring more people into the box because you're scared of Aaron Rodgers, then okay, this run game will just continue to keep going. So I'm curious to see what it's going to be like with that.
I don't want to say, because, you know, if Minnesota loses on the road, I don't think that's, especially to Green Bay, I don't think that's like, oh, they are who they thought they were. That was tough to say for some reason. But I feel like this is a big game for Green Bay to win, more so than Minnesota. So, I mean, I picked the Packers to win the Super Bowl, and all of that comes down to everything we've talked about. It's the improved secondary. It's getting Aaron Jones more touches and getting him in space. And the game script played such a big factor in Minnesota's winning. Because if Minnesota gets a lead, I'm not going to say you're done, but you're on the cuffs of being done. Because they're going to run the ball even more. And we saw Dalvin. Dalvin looks every bit as a top five running back in the NFL. He looks amazing. Looks healthy, all that. And if you give Kirk Cousins in play action, he's going to get confident in that pocket. And like you said, if you give him a clean pocket, he has Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs to throw to. And those are two pretty good receivers, you could say. So this is just has all the makings of it. You toss in the fact that this is a very good rivalry game, and there's fantasy implications. There's RB1s, there's wide receiver ones, there's DFS sleepers and MVS because he's going up against Trey Waynes. It's just an ultimate test of how each conflicting style of offenses, how they're going to do against improved defenses. And I don't know about you, I'm going to side with the Packers in a very, very close game. Give me Green Bay and the points at 24-20. Noah, how do you see this? What is your prediction for this game?
I think Green Bay has a chance to solidify themselves as the reason why you picked them to win the Super Bowl. If they can win this game and neutralize a run game, a Gary Kubiak run game led by Dalvin Cook and Aaron Rodgers, and I think the Packers are going to be coming off, 10 days? Because they played Thursday night?
Mm-hmm.
That's three extra days of not physical prep, yeah. Okay, cool. mental prep, just in terms of schematics and Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers collaborating together, looking at this Vikings D, seeing what holes they can find, seeing what matchups they like. And this, on the flip side, this Packers D scheming up how they're going to stop this Gary Kubiak run game. I think those couple extra days are the teetering point for me to know that the Packers are going to cover. So we're going to go 31-21 Packers.
Ooh, man, high scoring. Like it, love it. All right, we're going to go to the rest of the slate. We're not going to go that deep. We're going to, I don't know, I don't want to say speed through it, but not take more than 3 or 4 minutes per game. Next up is San Francisco 49ers at 1-0 at the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 0-1. Quick before you dive into this game a little bit, who do you think's favorite in this game?
Cincinnati's at home?
Yes.
I would say Cincinnati's 2-point favorites.
Right on the nose, baby. 2-point favorite Cincinnati, and I'm going to go with those points as well. But 49ers offense looks like a work in progress. So Jimmy G Garoppolo did not look too crisp against the Bucs. That could be because the Bucs are now a vaunted defense, reminding us of the early 2000s. But I'm not going to go that far. But I feel like it's going to be a little bit for him to get going because he doesn't trust any of his pass catchers outside of George Kittle. Inconsistent pass catchers. It's the running back position in this organization is cursed, as Tevin Coleman is already on the IR. So a promising offense now has inconsistent receivers in picks and Dante Pettis, who played 2 snaps, relying on Deebo Samuel and Marquise Goodwin. That doesn't sound like the recipe for success for this offense. They do have Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert, who are more than capable of holding their own and were pretty good last year down the stretch. Pass rush, we'll see how they go. Cincinnati had 4 sacks on Russell Wilson last week, and they did enough to win that game, but Andy Dalton of that offense was the story. Zach Taylor calling plays in his debut as a head coach and play caller. Dalton had 418 yards, got the ball out of his hands quickly to negate their bad offensive line. This helped against Nick Bosa, D4, and the 49ers strong front. John Ross and Tyler Boyd could take advantage of this 49ers secondary. And the Bucks gave up, and the 49ers gave up 7 catches for 60 yards to Bucks running backs through the air. And the 49ers are a million times better schematically and talent-wise at that position. So what are your thoughts on, and how do you see this game playing out?
I'm curious to see how the Bengals, big question is will Joe Mixon play? Joe Mixon playing or not playing will decide this game for me.
Why do you say that?
I'm not the biggest Giovanni Bernard fan. I think he will be serviceable, but Joe Mixon in my opinion, will takes this offense to the next level because he is like Dalvin and that gets yards when he's not supposed to get yards. And keeps this team on schedule, which is huge for Andy Dalton. You get Andy Dalton, like when he was great at TCU, it's because he was on schedule. Gary Patterson had him in a system that allowed him to continue to just play as it came. I kind of view Jared Goff and him in the same way. In terms of you get Jared Goff off schedule and behind the chains, I'm not crazy about it. But you keep a good run game or even a quick pass game to continue to move the chains. That's what I like about this Bengals offense. I'm curious to see how they're going to use John Ross. I'm excited. John Ross, Tyler Boyd. Where does the attention go? We saw Eifert get a little bit of action late in the game last week. Can Zach Taylor continue to create different mismatches with the speed that he does have? The Niners, if they can neutralize the pass rush, they have the talent to beat this Niners team through the air as long as they can neutralize this pass rush.
That's why I'm kind of not as – I love Joe Mixon as a football player. That's why I'm not really like that and worried about Gio Bernard coming in because there was rumors all offseason that Bernard was loved by the coaching staff and wanted getting involved. And if Dalton's just going to sit in shotgun and not even bother – working in a ground game, I think that works better for Dalton. That's how he was at TCU, and we saw last week how sharp he had zip on his balls, man. I was very, very impressed with his arm talent, and that's why I am taking Cincinnati. I was more impressed with them than the 49ers in week one. And honestly, San Francisco needs to prove to me that they can win without being gifted 14 points by an opposing quarterback. So I'm going to take Cincinnati 27-20. How about you?
I got Cincinnati 24-20.
Right on thing. All right, let's keep this moving to the second AFC South showdown of the day between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Houston Texans. Gardner Minshew came in, 2 for 269 yards, and put up 19 points against Kansas City Chiefs in relief of Nick Foles, who is out until at least week 11 with a broken collarbone. This is an uphill battle for Jacksonville. Houston's coming off a short week, and as much as the attention may want to be focused on Gardner Minshew getting his first start, but Houston's defense isn't good. Jacksonville's D-line can single-handedly win this game. Do you think that they can get it done, though?
I think so. I think this is a game that Jacksonville is going... I think they can win this game because they have the defense to be able to neutralize this Texans offense. The D-line, Josh Allen and that D-line are going to tee off. That this is a better pass rushing. Like, the reason I think Jacksonville's D struggled last year is because the offense gave them no help. They were just playing on short fields and a lot of them last year and just not getting a whole lot of help from that offense. I love Gardner Minshew. I think did you watch any of his press conference? Did you see any of those clips?
I did not.
He was saying that, you know, they traded for Josh Dobbs.
Yes.
He is, you know what, Josh Dobbs was a rocket scientist. He's an aerospace engineer degree from Tennessee. And he was talking about Gardner Minshew's like, oh, you know, I just have a communications degree, like Josh Dobbs on another level, and everyone in the media room laughed. But he reminds me of Mike Leach in terms of how he goes around with the media. And I love that type of mojo. And I think that there, if he throws the ball, he's going to be comfortable throwing the ball a lot. And this Texans defense is not daunting at all. And they have weapons. This is my, I have upsets of the week, but if you consider this an upset, I got Jacksonville winning this game.
You have them winning outright?
Yeah.
I have them covering. I have it 23-17 Houston, simply because we saw Deshaun Watson get sacked 6 times, hit another 11 times, was checked by the medical staff twice, and he still had 4 touchdowns on the road in New Orleans. They lost, and Jacksonville isn't as aggressive in terms of defensive philosophy, but they do have better pass rushing talent. And looking at last year's games, Houston put up 20 points and just put up 20 in both games. And if Jacksonville can do that, I really like Minshew's chances of getting to 17 points and covering. Winning the game, whew, man. I want to do it. Trust me, I want to do it. I just think that I don't know. I just am not ready to pick Gardner Minshew over Deshaun Watson yet. And
that's fair. Maybe I'm foolish, but I just like the defense that Jack. I think the defense is going to be able to contain them enough.
Yeah, and because last year they had Blake Bortles at quarterback for both times.
I know Jalen Ramsey said that DeAndre Hopkins is unguardable, but
AJ Bouye,
yeah, he said that DeAndre Hopkins is damn near unguardable, and that there's a reason why DeAndre Hopkins is a 99 on Madden.
That's respect coming from Jalen.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I thought. So, but I think that defense, I think that pass rush is going to be able to get there. I do not think that this Texans O-line is going to be able to hang up. And like we talked about last week, Deshaun's style of play is not sustainable. And this is a tough defense to play against. If Telvin Smith is playing in this game, I'm not even thinking twice about this pick. It sucks that he's not, but I'm going to go Jacksonville. 24-21.
Man, that would be big. That would sound the alarms in Houston like never before. We'll see. We'll see if Jacksonville can come back from laying an egg at home to Kansas City, which is now, because laying an egg to Kansas City is nothing to hold your head over, nothing to get upset about. But, all right, let's keep moving. Let's go to the Meadowlands for a absolutely cracking matchup between the Buffalo Bills and the New York Giants. Bills coming off a comeback, 16-0, overturning a 16-0 deficit to win 17-16 on the road in this exact stadium. And Eli Manning still playing quarterback for the Giants. So I don't think we have to spend too much time on this. The Giants are still a two-man offense with Saquon and Evan Ingram, who played well last week despite their circumstances. And their offense has to climb up Mount Everest to produce points unless Saquon busts a long run, because Eli Manning is still limiting this team. If I see a single Eli Manning bootleg, I swear to God, I'm not going to watch another Giants snap all season until they play the Bucks next week. And then I'm not going to watch another one all season. I can't. I'm ready for Daniel Jones. But, I mean, I don't think we have to dive really deep into this. The Bills are superior in talent and coaching and have a chance to get two road wins in 2 weeks without leaving the state of New York. I think they get it done 23-17. What are your thoughts on this game? And I hope that you mention it, because if you don't mention it, I'll have to mention it at the end, that we see an uptick in targets and overall touches for a certain Buffalo running back.
Devin Singletary is going to tear up this game. He is the best back on that team. He's going to learn a lot from Frank Gore. I'm glad he has a vet like that to play with. The dude he makes people miss. Like we talked about last week, he made Jets players fall on their face. He's going to score a touchdown this week. I wish someone would trade him to me in my fantasy league, because I don't have any stock in him. I don't even think like if he'll be a great fantasy back. I just love watching him play. He's so explosive. He's explosive, great acceleration, and can cut, and is not tackled easily because he has such a low center of gravity. Similar to like a Maurice Jones-Drew type, just less bulky.
I think he's more shift. I think he's shiftier.
Yeah,
than MJD too.
Yeah, less bulky, less of a truck. But in terms of having to take him down, like even when you tackle him, he just stays on his feet.
I know, it's so funny.
I'm taking Buffalo big. I think Buffalo's 28-17. I don't even know if Giants can score 17 points.
That's where I was on the thing too, but I just can see Saquon busting one. I can see that.
But this Buffalo D is one of the best D's in the NFL. Very well coached. Could definitely see Buffalo just shutting this team out.
Mm-hmm. And I put up 20. I just threw the 23 points up there because you never know what you're going to get from Buffalo in terms of consistency and production from Josh Allen. But I think that's just for me personally. That has them covering, and it's a typical Buffalo game. Let's move to slightly to the south, where the Seattle Seahawks are facing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I know exactly where you're going with this, 100%. I am having a very difficult time with this game. And let me explain why. Seattle didn't look good, but they never looked in Week One. But they never looked good in Week One. They never looked good in the early part of the season, and they especially don't look good when they're playing bad teams at home, which is a very weird thing. This is just Pittsburgh's last stand. Coming off a 33-3 drumming, and Big Ben is playing at home. As I'm doing this, I'm literally saying to myself, I have the Steelers putting up 31 points, yet I have no proof that they can do that without Antonio Brown. And now that I think about that, I'm like, take away all the AB antics. Take away all this new stuff that came about, which we're acknowledging. We're not going to talk about because it's getting investigated, and we like to do our due diligence and wait for everything to be reported. That's what we do here at No Ordinary Pod. But do you think – I assume you're thinking like me that Seattle is just going to put up points on this terrible secondary if Russell Wilson can get any time at all. Do you think Pittsburgh has the weapons to go toe-to-toe with Seattle, even at home?
I think they do, but I don't know if they're going to click. I think they have the talent, but I think the part of the reason Juju was so good, and I love Juju, big fan of Juju, but him getting that number one receiver and not having the distraction of AB is, he's just amazing, one of the best number two receivers in the NFL. But he's going to have one of these younger guys, or not even younger guys, between like James Washington, but even Dante Moncrief. Someone's going to have to set up. Vance McDonald, someone has to step up in that passing game. But if they try to rely on Juju, how Big Ben has relied on AB to move the chains all these years, the Steelers team isn't going to score anything. And with Jadeveon Clowney, they're not going to be running the ball like amazingly. They might be somewhat productive, but they're not going to be amazing. James Conner's not going to be amazing in this game. The Seahawks D is tough.
Yeah, dude, maybe on the ground, but through the air, they were just carved up. And that's what I can't get out of my head, is that Dalton put up, they put up almost 500 yards on the Seattle. And that's what's so tough for me to pick this. And that's why I took the cowardly route and took a push. I took Steelers winning 31-27. And I normally don't roll with Pittsburgh. Trust me, if you listen to me talk or read my stuff at all over the past couple of years, I do not roll with Pittsburgh. And I don't know if I just don't trust this team. And I've been proven right. But for some reason, I'm thinking there's a lot of negative talk around Pittsburgh. Big Ben, my buddy Anthony is saying that Big Ben looks checked out and done. He's just ready to retire. I'm just saying, you know what? Maybe Pittsburgh just holds on for one more time. And if they do, this is the perfect chance for them because they throw the ball like crazy at home. They put up points at home. Their strength of their defense is their front seven and their D-line. Seattle's weakness is their O-line. I think that's a matchup where they can get a little thing in. I think Pittsburgh gets a big lead, and then Seattle just slowly chips away. Lockett, Metcalf get some garbage time points, and then Pittsburgh gets a late first down to win the game and clinch the game 31-27. So this game I do not feel good about at all.
Oh, I'm Seattle all the way. I don't trust Pittsburgh.
I know. I'm right there with you. I just think Seattle's going to – I don't know.
I will take Russell Wilson, even though I hate the play calling that Seattle has. But I'll take Russell Wilson, and because this is like my best case scenario all the time for teams, especially early in the season. You didn't play the best, but you still found a way to win. So what you learn more from a game when you lose than when you win. So it's as if they lost in terms of what they learned, but they won the game. Morale is high, but still, hey, we got lucky. Can't be playing like that every week. And this, I think Pete Carroll's a better coach than Mike Tomlin. I think Russell Wilson's a better quarterback. And I think Seattle has the better defense.
So what do you think the score will be?
Seahawks?
We both have Seattle scoring 27, so... let's move on to a game that probably won't take long to discuss. The Cowboys at the Redskins. Redskins surprised us last week. I don't see that happening this week. Dallas is 6-point road favorites. We gushed about Dallas's offense. Their defensive talent is amazing. Their offense is amazing. Their play calling is now amazing. This is just a really fun Dallas team, and I don't see the Washington Redskins being the team that slows us down. Fantasy-wise, Dak, Zeke, Amari must-starts every week. Michael Gallup, guy I've loved all for 2 years now, creeping into WR2 territory. Washington's and your boy Terry McLaurin, nice game script, and him and Chris Thompson should be some nice PPR plays. Adrian Peterson's getting the start with Darius Geis injured again with another knee scope. Not looking good for him. Hopefully he can get back to health because he was such a fun player in college and in preseason last year. I have Dallas 31-20. Not thinking about it twice. Noah, your thoughts?
I just want to say this. It's a thought that I've had. I think Kellen Moore is this might be a bold take. New and improved Sean McVay. In terms of young OCs in the league. I'd rather have Kellen Moore Dan, and maybe this is my Idaho homage coming out in full flesh, but I'd rather have Kellen Moore now moving forward than Sean McVay in the past moving forward.
I mean, I feel like they do a lot of the same things, except Kellen Moore does that at the shotgun, which I feel like is a bigger advantage.
I'd agree. But in terms of this game, the Cowboys are one of my favorite teams in the NFL to watch. I can't. And I talked to Nino about this. Also, shout out Nino. Nice call on the Bucks win. He's calls for a Bucks sweep of the Panthers this year, and he's 1-for-1 so far this year. We'll see how it goes for the rest of the season. What was I saying?
You're just talking about the thoughts in the game. Score prediction was coming.
Oh, he was saying how he doesn't like the Cowboys, and I think a lot of the reason people don't like the Cowboys is they were so bad for so many years. They were 8-8 and just average so many years, but everyone or the media kept hyping them up as America's team, and they get to play in all the Thanksgiving games, and people just didn't enjoy watching them because they were mediocre, yet they were all on all the primetime TV. But now they're actually fun to watch. They are so much fun. The offense is so exciting. That run game's good. They got some receivers. The defense is fast. In terms of score, 35-17 Cowboys. 35-20 Cowboys.
Not bad at all. I mean, I'm right there with you. And that's going to wrap up our coverage on Radio St. Pete. Thanks for checking out, guys. If you haven't already, check us out on Ordinary Pod on Twitter or Spotify. If you want to get your stuff besides Radio St. Pete, we're on Spotify, we're on SoundCloud, we're on Apple. And yeah, guys, thanks for checking us out. And this is the Ordinary Pod on the Radio St. Pete Network.